Last time, we have seen this, well, I have explained you an example of mirror symmetry, and a consequence of this is some surprising conclusion about this complexified Kähler moduli space. And this linear sigma, so today I start discussing linear sigma model, and this is the model that can explain such things without using mirror symmetry, and also, and therefore you can actually have a chance to use this description, linear sigma model, to understand mirror symmetry. So this is important. So today and the next time, I will discuss this. So as I said, so the complexified Kähler moduli space of quintic was if we use the mirror symmetry like this, so there's some special points. So here it is this large volume limit, and only in some neighborhood of this you can use nonlinear sigma model. So the size is larger and larger, and curvature is smaller and smaller here, but curvature becomes larger and larger in this direction, and at some point the curvature is of the target represents the coupling of the interaction of the nonlinear sigma model, and if it is too strong you can no longer trust this description. And but still the mirror symmetry predicts that you should consider extension of this even beyond zero volume, and there's this whole region which cannot be captured by the nonlinear sigma model. And here there's a point where two-dimensional quantum field theory is invalid. A singularity of the theory corresponding to this conifold singularity in the mirror, and here there is another special point, V5 symmetry point, and it is known that this corresponds to something called some exactly solvable CST, called sometimes called Gepner model. So there's this interesting story in the region which you cannot use, in the region where you cannot use nonlinear sigma model, namely in the region where geometry doesn't make sense at all. But still, there is interesting theories. And the mirror of this, if you consider the large volume in the mirror, makes perfect sense, perfect geometric sense. But in this side, there's no geometric picture. But still, there's a family of theories. So that's the prediction of mirror symmetry, and of course this cannot be seen by as long as you are considering nonlinear sigma model. So this cannot be seen by just nonlinear sigma model. You could consider some quantum correction to the nonlinear sigma model, But that's just some perturbative expansion around flat space, or weak coupling, weak curvature expansion. So it's, you can only see some behavior near this, and you can, you don't hope to go, say, beyond zero volume. Okay. And this linear sigma model I'm going to discuss. So I sometimes abbreviate like linear sigma model, provides realization of the whole family of theories and also can tell us and can tell us about this Kähler moduli, complexified Kähler moduli space. So this is one motivation to consider linear sigma model. And of course, as we will see, this provides, in a sense, better, even at the geometric regime, better description of this nonlinear sigma model, because this, you only know the patch by patch description. You have to change the coordinate if you go from one region of the manifold to another. But this provides us a global description, and therefore you can capture even non-perturbative effects of this nonlinear sigma model. Perturbative meaning this perturbation series with respect to these powers of curvature. That is simply done by this local analysis. Choose any, so this corresponds, when you do analysis of a nonlinear sigma model, given a metric, what you can do is pick a point and then look at the behavior near this point, look at the behavior of the metric near this point, and then do the perturbation theory. But of course, in such a description, you can of course not hope to go to see then whether there is some non-trivial topology in here, away from this point. So we need a better description, and this also provides us a good description. So another motivation is provide a global description of the system. And also, this will be the topic after this week and next. This is a provides us a tool, is a tool to prove or understand the mirror symmetry. So how do we find such this mirror of this quintic, which is this resolution of this overfold, or more general Calabi-Yau manifold, or even non-Calabi-Yau manifold? Okay. So let me start by giving you a basic idea of this linear sigma model by considering a toy model. Let's consider a real scalar field fields, say phi 1 to phi n. This is real scalar. These are real scalar. Or this tuple is r to the n valued with action, and action s 1/2 minus some potential theory like this. So this is the standard kinetic term for the real scalar, and this is a potential for this. So the potential looks like potential is this thing. This thing is the potential, U. Looks like following. Let me just draw it in the case when n is equal to 2. Because the blackboard is only, well, okay, I can draw a sensible picture only for d n equal to 2, and it's like this. When r is positive, and the zero of the potential, this is when this phi I squared is R, and this is the sphere of dimension n minus 1 embedded into the R to the n, and the size is proportional to square root of r, or let's just denote r to specify the size of this. And when r is zero, so the length here is square root r, so when r becomes smaller and smaller, this, and height is like r squared, this goes down and this shrinks, and in the end you have this quartic potential. So you have this kind of potential. So this behaves like phi 4. Okay. And when r is negative, then there's no zero of the potential, but the minimum is at phi equal to zero, and so, and this behavior of the minimum is quadratic, because you just expand it in phi, so, and yeah, this is this. And this, around this phi potential looks quadratic in phi. So this is a family of theories, and in here potential looks like this, and there's a zero of the zero of the potential, which is the n minus 1 dimensional sphere. At r equal to zero, this is zero of the potential is a point, and for negative r, there is no zero of the potential, but there is still a minimum. Okay. So let's look at this case. Let's just expand around at some chosen point and see what this theory looks like. So to do this, let's just choose a polar coordinate. So rho and omega I, where omega I is the coordinate on the sphere, so this, and phi I is written as this with respect to the polar coordinate. And it's just to plug this into here and compute, and it's very simple. So there's this term, and also this term. Positive and expand around rho is square root r. Rho is square root r is the zero locus of the potential. Okay. Then let's just look at the potential. So the potential depends only on rho, so the potential is rho, and so expanding, so let's just, consider this as the new field, new variable, then it is, just plug this, so this plus this is the potential, and let's further expand. Tells you something. This tells you that there's a quadratic part in the potential, and this shows that this part shows that delta rho has a mass given by 2 lambda square root r. Okay. So if you have a scalar field theory with standard kinetic term and the quadratic piece given by this, then you identify its mass, classical mass, to be this. And then you just consider the other term as this interaction term. Okay. So rho is massive, has a mass, non-zero mass. But omega i's are massless because there's no potential, no quadratic part, of course. So what we have seen is that, so if you consider expanding around some minimum, so there's this omega i's, a massless direction. So you can see massless because it doesn't change the value of the potential or the energy along this direction. But this direction is massive. Delta rho is massive. And the mass is given by that. So what this means is that, so if you consider a physical process of energy E much less than this mass, 2 lambda square root r, energies, then this massive mass, the massive mode is hard to excite. If there's something heavy with some small energy, you cannot move it. So that means that delta rho or rho can be regarded as a fixed background. Because it doesn't move, you cannot move it with small energies. So those energies, this can be regarded as fixed. Okay. So this is the important idea. So at those low energies, at these energy scales, you are left with the theory of massless modes with fixed rho equal to square root r fixed. And this is, so if you look at this action, you no longer consider these part dynamical because it's frozen. And this to be this value r. So this means that this is the nonlinear sigma model on or the whose target space with the target S n minus 1 to the r, which is this vacuum manifold. The zero point set of the classical potential. So that's the basic idea. You can obtain this nonlinear sigma model starting from this simple scalar field theory with potential. And as you can see, you don't have to choose the this description is not patch by patch description. You just use this phi to describe it. Just phi's are enough to consider this the whole of this of the n minus one dimensional sphere. So this one remark is this description. Is not patch-wise. And therefore, there's a chance to capture this capture global effect or non-perturbative effect. To be able to capture global or non-perturbative effect. And another thing is that this theory makes sense for any value of R. So the system makes sense for any value of R, including R negative. Just like we wanted to discuss negative volume, here you can discuss negative volume theory, although there's no zero locus of the potential. So this is the basic idea. So, okay, so you have a simple system parameterized by parameters, this lambda and r. And if you change some parameter like r, you can change the radius and even go beyond the positive radius. Right.
So this is
non-linear
sigma
on the yes, right. And you can read this just by looking at this.
Right.
So this is a round metric.
Right. So if you have other metric, that wouldn't necessarily be a
that's right. But that you could also treat by say just deforming this part. This you can also do. You can also do this by slightly deforming this part. Because what you want is to have more general metric in here, and it doesn't matter because rho is will be frozen anyway by this mass. So you just have to touch this. Any other questions? And actually I have a little bit cheated this part, this last sentence. This is not true in quantum theory. Actually in quantum theory there is no distinction of actually positive or negative. You may be surprised to hear this, but it's actually true by so-called renormalization. Effect. So, but this is only for this particular system. If you consider a system like Calabi-Yau, this naive sentence is actually true. So let's just ignore this. This is the only purpose of this example is to show you the basic idea. So I just ignore this subtlety by quantum effect. We will see such an example in our supersymmetric non-linear sigma model on space-like sphere, namely CPN. And you will see what I mean by this later, but for now let's just ignore this. Okay, so this is the basic idea, and another. So before going into the actual thing, let me do another exercise. Which is to consider the target space that appears at the bottom. The next thing I want to do is the case where the bottom is a Kähler manifold, because we are interested in say 2,2 nonlinear sigma model, 2,2 quantum field theory, and for if you consider supersymmetric nonlinear sigma model, we need this target space to be Kähler or generalized Kähler. So let's just do one more exercise before doing supersymmetric thing to discuss the example like this where you have Kähler manifold at the bottom. And this introduces this process of gauging or gauge field. So the example I'm going to consider is CPN minus 1 size R given by V1 through Vn C to the N with say this. modulo U1, where U1 acts on Z1 through Zn by e to the I alpha Z1, e to the I alpha Zn. So we want to engineer a nonlinear sigma model on this space using a similar idea. So what's the linear sigma model for this? That's the next thing I'm going to explain. And let's just try to do the obvious thing. Try the following. Let's replace this R to the n valued field to be C to the n valued. Because of this. Let's prepare the action. And then declare that this configuration phi 1 of x through phi n of x to be equivalent to e to the phi I alpha of x phi 1 of x through e to the I alpha of x phi n of x. Actually, there's a problem. In order to identify these two configurations, we want this value of the action for these two configurations to be the same. And so does it make sense? Namely, the action is invariant. And the potential term is okay, because this potential depends only on this absolute value squared. So absolute value squared of this is the same as absolute value squared of that. 1 by 1. So that's no problem. So potential term is okay. But what about the kinetic term? Let's see what this does to this kinetic term. So this thing. So this turns to this. And since alpha is x dependent, it's not just this term, but also this term. So this is not invariant. Not invariant. So it doesn't make sense. So we need to cure this problem, and there's a standard way to cure this. This is to introduce a new field. Actually, a one-form field, or vector field, V mu, that transforms as V mu of x to V mu of x minus this derivative of alpha. So that some combination with derivative is invariant or covariant. So that, let's define d nu of phi I to be this plus I v nu phi I transforms nicely, and we know how it transforms. This transforms like this, and this transforms like plus I b nu minus and e to the I alpha phi I. And the point is that this term is cancelled by this term. So you just have this. So this is covariant. So that's, so this is so-called covariant derivative, and the this combination would be invariant. Okay. Okay, so this, you can use this as a part. Let's just plug. One idea is just to plug this, replace delta, ordinary time and space derivative by this covariant derivative. Then that's, this is invariant. And you can do this. But you can also consider other invariant, and especially when you introduce new field, you'd better introduce a kinetic term for this. Although this is not necessary, but you can consider this, and let's just consider that. So another invariant, so but kinetic term must be invariant under this transformation. And this is written using this curvature. This is the curvature. So you can consider this thing. And introduce this gauge kinetic term. And then the standard, the naive replacement of ordinary derivative by this covariant derivative. And so here it makes sense to identify to declare or identify those configurations that's related this related by this gauge transformation. Consider is this theory modulo this identification. So this process is called is called gauging of U1 symmetry. The U1 symmetry of this potential, this phase rotation symmetry. And this V mu is called gauge field. This transformation is called gauge transformation. And this is called gauge transformation. So, and this theory we obtained is the theory is called U1 gauge theory. So let's just consider this gauge theory. And again, as in this case of a sphere, let's look at this potential, especially the zero locus of the potential. Let's just look at the potential first. For example, in the simplest case, where when n is just one potential. Actually, it's the same thing as before. This is this real phi and imaginary phi, and the potential is exactly as before. And then there's this S1. At the minimum. So this is the S1. For when R is positive, when R is zero, it's just the same thing, so I just write it very briefly. And let's focus on this case, and let's choose the polar coordinate phi. So in this case, phi rho times e to the I phi bar phi, and d mu of phi can be written as I times this plus I v mu rho e to the I phi. So e to the I phi, and the real part is simply this, and the imaginary part is simply this. And I notice that this v mu prime defined by this shifted one, this is gauge invariant. So with respect to this polar coordinate, gauge transformation shift phi by alpha, and v mu transforms like this, so this it cancels. And this gauge field, the field strength or the curvature can also be written as this. Okay. So everything can be written in terms of gauge invariant field. And let's just write this action or the Lagrangian. Lagrangian is just replace, you can rewrite it as prime 1, and from this kinetic term, it's just this squared, and that squared is that squared plus that squared. And that squared is simply v mu prime squared. So it's like rho squared v zero prime plus squared minus rho squared v one prime squared. And the rho part, which is simply this. Okay? And let's expand around this zero locus, which is squared r plus delta rho. And it, that part doesn't change, except that you can replace this by this value, and then write higher order part. So this, let's just rewrite it in this way. Notation is this b mu squared is this contracting the indices using the Lorentz metric, and also rho squared for this, and so we are expanding around this, so it's, you just write it like delta rho squared, and the first term from this is as before, in this case let's write it 2 lambda 2 squared r squared delta rho squared plus dot dot dot. These are the parts which are cubic or higher, or cubic, or in this case only quadratic in delta rho and v mu primes. Yes. So these are, this part is called, can be regarded as interaction terms. And this part will be the kinetic term, and this is the quadratic part, which determines the mass of those field. And you can look at this. This tells you that this v mu prime has mass given by E times square root 2r. Just rescale fields so that it has the canonical kinetic term, and then this is the mass. And this delta rho has again mass given by this. Mass given by lambda square root 2r. Both are massive. What happened is that this gauge field acquired a mass, non-zero mass, which is this E times root 2r, by absorbing or eating the angular variable var phi. So absorbing process is simply v mu is replaced by this combination. Okay. And such phenomenon is called Hicks mechanism. So in this example, this gauge field acquires a mass by Hicks mechanism. And also this transverse mode is massive by the potential. So this is the simplest case where n is 1. And you can also do the same for n larger than 1. Okay, maybe I should say one more word. So at energies less than both of these mass, say E this and lambda this, V mu prime and delta or rho are hard to excite. And can be regarded as frozen or fixed background. So what are we left with? Nothing. So we are left with nothing. No degree of freedom at those energy scales. So in this case, this is a linear sigma model of a point. So the vacuum manifold in this case is this modulo U1. S1 mod U1 is a point. So so this system is called, can be regarded as, or called linear sigma model for this vacuum manifold, which is S1 of R mod U1, which is a point. Okay, so this is the simplest case. And let's just consider the more interesting case. So in this case, the mode, as in this case, mode transfers to this equation. Has mass, the same mass as this. And the mode tangent to U1 gauge orbit and also the gauge field V mu combines into V mu prime, again massive by Hicks mechanism. Okay. And you're left with, or the rest is the nonlinear sigma model on target space Cp n minus 1 r. On the vacuum, this is the vacuum manifold. So, what you found is the following. So at energy is less than this, the system can be regarded as non-linear sigma model on this. Okay, so this system is the linear sigma model corresponding to this complex projective space. Okay. Right. So this is the toy model. We have considered the theory without fermions, namely without supersymmetry. But next, I'm going to consider the theory with supersymmetry. It is to add fermion in a suitable way. And all these things we have observed, having some direction having mass by potential and also some field having mass by Higgs mechanism, will be repeated also in this supersymmetric setup. And the best way to describe this is using this superfield. So I'm going to discuss that in the next 1 hour. Okay. Shall I take a break or continue? Maybe 5 minutes break? Okay.
Mm-hmm. So this is going to be the mass for the delta, for the rope, for rope. Mm-hmm. How did you read off the mass for the gauge field?
Okay, so this is like the same. If you write it carefully, then if you write it just honestly.
That's what I was going to do. Okay. What is this thing? This is the curvature for.
For this V.
And this what? For the field?
For the V.
For the gauge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, supersymmetric version. Linear sigma model. So let's recall what we did before introducing supersymmetry. So we had this kind of symmetry, phase rotation symmetry in the before gauging. And this wasn't good. This didn't have a good transformation property. It transforms like this. So this was not invariant. So we introduced another field that transforms like this, so that this d mu phi, which is delta mu phi, transforms in a covariant way. So this is invariant. And we want to do the same thing in the case with supersymmetry. So if you want to consider, say, complex scalar field and in a supersymmetric system with complex scalar field, then one way is to introduce this chiral superfield. Which can be written as this plus theta plus this plus theta minus where y is, I forgot, maybe it was this. Okay, so essentially it's a field involving four fields. And the ordinary scalar field theory is given by, say, action given by this. So this combination was there. So the idea is to find some system where this or suitable generalization of this, like generalization of this to this, is invariant under gauge transformation. So we want to consider a phase rotation, supersymmetric version of the phase rotation. And this is like this, where this again is a superfield. But if we want this to be chiral superfield, we want this A to be chiral as well. However, just like in that case, phi bar phi transforms to e to the minus ia bar plus ia and phi bar phi. And for chiral superfield, there's no chance that this is zero. So it's not the same. This is not invariant. Not invariant. Just like in that case. And then what you do is to introduce another field. Introduce another field, say V, that transforms in a way that cancels this. And I just do the following. V minus IA plus IA bar, so that phi bar e to the v phi is invariant. And indeed, it's invariant. Let's see. So phi bar phi part transforms in this way. Minus ia bar plus ia phi bar phi. And e to the v part transforms this way, e to the v minus ia plus iar. And I have chosen this and this so that these cancel. So we have this invariant. So it's that simple, this generalization to supersymmetric system. So this V is an analog of the gauge field, V mu. Okay. And we want, so this part is actually real, so V can be real, and we want this V to be real superfield. Real superfield. V dagger is V. And V has, except that there's no constraint, so V is a superfield which can be written in this way. Plus or minus theta bar plus F plus bar. There are 16 terms related to each other by this complex conjugation. So essentially 16 real terms, real component fields, 16 real fields. So it sounds horrible, but actually you can simplify it by the fact that we are going to mod out the theory by this transformation, namely this and this, using, so the gauge symmetry we are going to, of the system we are going to consider, is phi to e to the ia phi and v to V minus IA plus IA bar. And we can use this symmetry to actually fix some of these components. So V, one can use this to fix or eliminate some of the components of V. So how many are there? There are 16 real. So let's just count. So V originally had 16 real, and A had 4 complex, or equivalently 8 real. So if we fully use A, then we're left with 8. 16 minus 8, which is 8 real components, if fully used. Okay. Well, if you use it, then we have already used up this symmetry, so you no longer consider further mod out by the same symmetry. So you will be left with a theory without gauge invariants, gauge transformation, including 8 real fields. Okay. But and also original field. But actually, what we this gauge transformation is a bit involved, so we do not actually use up all this gauge transformation. We will use only 7 of them, 7 out of 8 gauge field, gauge transformation. Then this will be 9 real. So let's just see what they are. So I'm going to write down the answer. So after you use this, then you can bring V. So essentially, A has scalar components, and A is like phi. It's A is chiral, so it has the lowest component, those components, and those components. So this part will be killed by A or A bar. And the first part, the lowest part that can appear is the theta bar part, which are not included in this chiral superfield or its conjugate. So theta bar part. Bar part with something, and also theta bar or theta part, and also theta bar, theta bar part. So let's see how many of them are there. Okay, this will be the form of the of this thing, and let's see. And right. All right. Yes. Let's see. So let's just rewrite it one by one. V0 minus V1. I'm writing in a very special way so that the Lorentz transformation property is visible. So these are the theta bar parts, all combinations, and theta bar parts. There are only 2 components because there's only one kind of this, and there's plus or minus. And I write it in the following way. And the final part is there's only one component. D. Okay, how many fields? 1 and 2 complex, meaning 4 real, and 2 component complex, meaning 4 real. Oh. What? Oh, yeah. That's okay. 2 complex, which is 4 real. This is 2, real 2. So D is 1. Lambda, this is complex. 2 complex, so 4 real. And sigma, 2 real. And V0, V1, and 2 real. So indeed, we have 9 fields. So which part we haven't used? Actually, this is the part where you act this. So if you consider A here, A can be A1 plus A2 plus higher component. And this gauge transformation, V to V minus IA plus IA bar, this includes only A2. It's 2A2. So A1 is missing. So I haven't used this A1 part in here. So there's a residual gauge symmetry, this A1 or real A, the lowest component of A. So the residual gauge transformation, which is A is alpha of x, no theta bar. Okay, and this, what it does to this V is V mu is sigma doesn't change, lambda plus minus doesn't change, and D doesn't change. So that's the residual gauge symmetry. And from this notation you can see that V mu is a vector or one-form field, and sigma is a complex scalar, and lambda plus minus is a Dirac fermion, and D is a real scalar. We want this V to have specific Lorentz transformation property, which is a scalar, and these carry some Lorentz transformation property, and these will have those that cancel that transformation property. Okay. And okay, sorry. And also we have phis, psi plus minus, and F. They just transform in the standard way. So you can see that this is the ordinary gauge transformation for those fields, and these can be regarded as neutral field. So we thought that this is horrible, 16 components, too complicated, but after you remove or use up most of this large gauge transformation, you end up with this very simple system, ordinary gauge theory. And the curvature. So just as in the ordinary field theory, ordinary gauge theory, you have gauge invariant curvature, which is denoted by sigma, which is defined by this. And, oh, okay, so let me just give a name to this. This choice of using gauge transformation to eliminate some component is called Vesse-Zimino gauge. So when I say Vesse-Zimino gauge, or choose Vesse-Zimino gauge, I just assume that V has this expression, no lower component. So this is the curvature, and this is invariant, indeed invariant. And V to V minus IA plus IA bar. Because A is annihilated by D bar plus. By the way, this, by anti-commutativity, this is the same as this. So, using this expression, this part is annihilated by this because A is chiral. And this part is annihilated by this because A bar is conjugate of the chiral superfield. So it is indeed invariant under this gauge transformation. So this has a chance to be this is an invariant superfield, and it deserved to be named chiral because it has this in the Gresser-Zumino gauge. It has the following expression. Where y tilde plus minus is just like y, but with a sign difference in minus component. And this is a ordinary curvature. Ordinary curvature. And this is, by this expression, you already see, but this is a twisted chiral superfield. By this expression, it's annihilated by D bar plus, because D bar plus squares to zero. And D minus zero. Using this expression, this is also annihilated by D minus. So, this is a twisted chiral superfield. Okay. Now you can write down some supersymmetric Lagrangians, and I'm going to write some very simple ones and then express this in terms of component fields in the Gresser-Zumino gauge. So, as we have seen, this combination is invariant. Okay. And the gauge kinetic term is provided by this. And also, yes? E squared, thank you, yes. Yes. And also you consider this real part of, because you have this twisted chiral superfield, which is gauge invariant, you can consider this twisted F term. Here you can put any expression for sigma, for now let's just consider some linear expression in sigma. Where T is some complex parameter, let's call R minus I theta. Let's just consider this. And so you have You don't have any idea about what it is until you write down in terms of components. So let's write it down. And the vessel is mirror gauge. And I write it like d mu. So it has ordinary kinetic term for this charged scalar field, and also kinetic term for the charged Dirac fermion. And also it has this component and also this component, this part. So F squared, F absolute phi squared would be here even without this. And this phi squared D is from this, because V has the top component of D, of V is this. And this is a combination of the lowest component of phi by phi and the top component of V. And the rest is this. And also there are other terms. There are terms like right. This times this will also give us theta to the fourth term, and it combined with the lowest component, you have a term like this. And also there are other parts depending on the fermion. This is from this part. It may look complicated, but don't worry. There's a way to understand all these things. Or when you relate this to nonlinear sigma model, you see all the meaning of all these terms. And kinetic term for this gauge field, the superfield sigma, is the standard kinetic term for the neutral complex scalar field, and standard kinetic term for the neutral Dirac fermion. And also the standard kinetic term for the gauge field and the squared term, which doesn't depend on the derivative of D. And the final thing is simply just linear term in the top component of sigma. So this is the whole component expression in Vesalino gauge. And so first thing to notice is that D has this capital D. This appears only here, here, and there. So there has it has no kinetic term. So such a field is called auxiliary field. And since, in particular in this case, the dependency is just at most quadratic, you can solve it and then eliminate it, or integrate it. It can be integrated out. Or solve it and plug it in the action in L. So you can eliminate it. Not just setting zero, but just solve it and then integrate out, or complete the square and then ignore this D plus something squared part. Then what you, then after you do this, then action looks like the following. Potential for sigma and phi, and this term linear in this curvature, and plus fermion term, plus terms involving fermion. Potential is simply this, this. And you notice that this system is very much similar to this linear sigma model for a point we have considered. This bosonic part, essentially this part and this part, and that part is exactly the same where we set this lambda and E to be the same. And there are other parts coming from this presence of sigma, this part and sigma kinetic term, and also there is this curvature, the term linear in the curvature. So this is the same as linear sigma model for point, or point which is CP0. CP 1 minus 1, which is 0, with lambda equal to, this coupling lambda equal to E, up to, well, except that we also have this sigma field, and also this field, and also this term. Okay. And you can do the same also for the case where you have many fields, many phi fields, say n phi I fields. Then you expect that you have similar system, for similar to this linear sigma model for CPn minus 1. So let's consider n phi i's, phi. So phi 1 through phi n, And the action, which is the fourth letter, and then sum over 1 to n, phi I bar e to the b, phi I, minus this, plus real part of d2 theta tilt minus d sigma. Then the component expression is similar. It's minus, well, 1 over 2 e squared minus sigma plus this minus sum over d mu phi I squared minus u of sigma phi I plus theta f theta 1 plus fermion terms. This is fermion terms. And this potential is just like that. You just have many fields, many terms. Of course, this is after eliminating this auxiliary field, D. Oh, and also F, sorry. I forgot to say this. The F and D. In that case, Fi and D. See this, why this expression appears, because let's just write it, d sum over I phi I squared plus d squared minus rd. Let's just complete the square of this, which just gives you this 2e squared d plus e squared phi sum over phi I minus r squared minus the square of this, so it's just this. And this is the part that can be ignored by this integrating out, and then you're left with this term, which is this part of this potential, and this part simply comes from this part. Okay, so this is the system, and let's look at the zero of the potential. So this is slightly different from the previous case because there's this new field, sigma. But as long as you choose this value of R in a suitable way, then you see you don't have to worry about it. So the u equal to zero locus, this is where sigma phi I all vanish, and also this is there. This is satisfied. And if R is positive, then sum of phi I must be non-zero, then that means sigma must be zero. Sum phi I is non-zero, then sigma must be zero. So you're left with this phi I from phi 1 to phi n such that I equal to n. And because we are modding out by this gauge transformation, you need to mod out by U1, then you have Cp n minus 1 size R. So that's the vacuum manifold. So, Victoria, I cannot write it because it's phi is n complex dimension and sigma is one complex dimension. But let me just still pretend this is that n plus one dimensional space. And then you have this. Oh, it's not too good. So there's a zero locus, and this is modulo mod U1. It's the Cp n minus 1. And there's also a transverse direction. And this you can see by expanding this potential. This transverse direction has mass E times square root 2r, as before. And all other terms. So, transverse to this. And gauge orbit. U1 orbit and a gauge field. Actually, all have mass E square root 2r. And also sigma. And also all other fermions, fermionic, and superpartners, and fermions. Wow. And superpartners. All have the same mass. Previously, we had seen when lambda and E were not the same, we had the transverse mode had bosonic case we have considered, we had the transverse mode had mass lambda squared 2r and gauge orbit and also gauge field has E squared 2r. They can be different because we have independent parameters, but they must, in this case, they all have the same mass E times square root 2r. And this is not an accident, this is by supersymmetry. This is a single super multiplet of mass E squared 2r. So this is actually the supersymmetric version of the supersymmetric version of the Higgs mechanism. So sometimes called super Higgs mechanism. Anyway, what we have seen is that at energies, E much less than the single mass scale, this, the system can be regarded as nonlinear sigma model. size R. Yes, R is renormalized. Right. This is simply classical picture. This is also related to this the remark for this 2n-1 sphere case, where I said initially I said the theory can be continued to R negative, but there is some renormalization effect, which I'm going to tell you next time perhaps, that R is actually not a good parameter of the theory. It should be replaced by some scale parameter. But let's not worry about this at this moment. We're just looking at this classical system, and this is the valid statement. Okay. And actually, just saying this is actually not enough. We need to specify the metric and the B field and all other data. And this you can also read by looking at this action carefully. But perhaps maybe I should take a break of 10 minutes. Yes, I should take a break. Yes. So we start at 3:15.